That's Mario Bauza with his Afro-Cuban Jazz Orchestra with El Manicero, the Peanut Vendor. Mario Bauza is actually the father of the genre we know today as Afro-Cuban Jazz. He brought it to the jazz world and meshed so well with it. He was trained classically, actually, in Cuba as a clarinetist and performed with the Philharmonic in Havana at the age of 9. But, of course, we know him really as the father of Afro-Cuban jazz in the United States. He died in 1993 at the age of 82. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Free Your Mind Friday. It is April the 25th. So let's get started with what is on your mind. 888-874-4888. Let's start. From Berkeley, we have Harvey. What's up?
Hello, wonderful Eutrice. How are you today?
Fine, thank you, Harvey. How are you?
Very good. Well, I feel that the American education system should be free, and there are so many reasons why people of all ages should have access to it and should be paid for by our tax dollars. The number one reason, it's too stressful now. It's just too stressful for the parents and the students. I listen to the daily news. I mean, the financial sector has made a business out of it and has taken the fun out of education. Really, it's no more fun, and people are stressed out over it. That's very unhealthy. And, you know, why should just people who have money get education? How do we know that a real gifted person may not be, have no money and have to end up working at McDonald's where they could have ended up being the next Steven Jobs or Albert Einstein? We all lose here in America. I think that our most precious resource is not commodities, but our youth. And I feel that full investment in them at this time through education is the smartest thing America could do if it really does want to keep one step ahead. It's at a point of education or incarceration. You know, we don't want jobs in prisons and prisons for profit. We want to change the world. And I say that if America wants a good investment, it invests in its youth. And that, you know, we have to look at the gross national product. Over half of it is invested in the military industrial complex. Maybe we wouldn't have to invest so much if we had really smart people to open up the world and create unity in the world instead of fear and hiding behind guns and weapons and you know, secrets and things like that. We got to change everything. So I'm calling for free education for all Americans, regardless of age, and that will lead us to a better world. That's the way to go.
Thank you. No disagreement there.
Thank you.
That's for sure. Thank you, Harvey. 888-874-4888. From Dallas, Sarah, you're on the air.
Oh, greetings to you, Eutrice.
Hello. What have you to say today?
Ma'am, not much. First of all, I would start off, Eutrice, and telling all to wish the NPR staff and yourself an enjoyable weekend.
The what staff did you just say?
Oh, Lord of mercy. What did I just say? The PRN. Oh, goodness gracious.
I just wanted you to know that I was listening.
Yes, ma'am. I do apologize. I didn't want to give the wrong shadow to the wrong people. But, yes, it's the PRN staff, because I heard the dedication that you did on yesterday, and it was most apropos and that you did that for one of the colleagues that unfortunately left out of here too soon.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to touch on, Eutrice, is Mr. Bundy strikes again. And this time his mouth wrote him this check that his behind looked like it might not be able to cash, because now everyone is running away from him as if though he stinks. And they don't want to have nothing to do with him. You see, this is the type
now,
of arrogance.
Now, you have to say who he is. This is Cliven Bundy,
the rancher that was given all of this celebrity status last week for standing his ground against the U.S. government for taking his cattle because he wouldn't pay his grazing fees. Now, here it is. He was the darling of the media. They had him on all these shows. Even Alex Jones, this nut job that's up here in Texas with me up there in Austin, had him on there, and they were, you know, saying he was such a great person, and then, as is typical, whatever is in you is going to come out. And then he had to come out and make the slave comment again about how much better off black people was. Now, this is the type of offensive things that these individuals, they like to say, and we always like to say that they don't know what they're talking about, but these people know exactly what they're talking about, and what's in you is always going to come out. Because this man going to go on a national television and say something idiotic about who is happy or who, first of all, what do you describe as being happy? Because someone is running around here showing all of their teeth and looking, is that supposed to mean that they're happy? Because I'm skinning and grinning?
Well, actually, you know, there's a very different way to look at this man. And, you know, he is in that time warp. He's in that world, you know, created. What he knows of African-Americans, to the extent that he knows anything, a large part of it was the information that he had available to him that reinforced his views.
Yeah, this media-created image of the happy Negro or black people were better off because we had all of our families together, but yet still we were picking cotton and we were all together on a plantation. We wasn't getting paid. We were getting brutalized, but yet still it's a better environment now that you're receiving all of this government assistance and people are sitting on their porches idle and they're not doing anything. First of all, you're receiving government assistance because you didn't want to pay your doggone bill in order to graze your own cattle. So you're receiving some sort of benefit. So what the heck are you talking about people receiving some measly substitute, maybe because of a disability or whatever, and they're receiving some sort of public aid and they're living in a subsidized housing?
Sarah, you have to understand that you are debating this question at a much higher level than where he exists. These things don't really compute in his world. He's living in a kind of hermetically sealed racist bubble.
What
is happening, really, it's not so much him in that sense, because
the crowd that he runs with.
Appeared he was always this way. But the media is actually embarrassed because they thought, in covering the way this story went, the kind of coverage they gave it and kind of made him a hero, they naturally thought, well, okay, we will, you know, continue to touch base with this guy who had face down the government, and that's the story that they told. So now he is the chief actor in his story. And the last thing they expected was that the actor is not reading the right lines. The actor is
he's
way off script. So now they have to basically shut down the story, and they have to shut it down very shortly. And they're beginning to do that because I saw Chris Cuomo today on CNN essentially saying to the man directly, you know, the comments you made, let's be real, they're very would you say not racist or something? And the guy says, no, well, I'm just being myself. And to a certain degree, you have to accept that. That is true. He is being himself. He is a particular species of individual that this country has. People who are informed about their views and who base their views on the kind of media exposure that they have. The media that they have available to them and what that story constantly says. You know, when you live in that part of the world, you're not getting, and this was the criticism of the Kerner Commission that studied the aftermath of the so-called civil rights rebellions of the 60s, they said that the media created such an extraordinarily inaccurate version of what the society is, and it misinformed everybody. He's a byproduct of that in that way.
But that is what they're supposed to do, Utrecht. You know, when somebody else is running a propaganda campaign to demonize a group of people, this is exactly what it is that they have to do. They have to play us up because we, of course, we are always going to be the bad actors. You know, we have to be painted as the evil no-gooder. So we've always got to be painted, regardless of what you do, you've always got to be painted as a bad actor. But Cleveland Bundy, he has to show the hypocrisy of what he's talking about, who receiving subsidies. Here it is. He has been sitting on land receiving government subsidies to be a farmer. He hasn't paid his bill in over 20 years for grazing rights. He is selling cattle and making money off of things that he has not even paid his bill, but yet still he's worried about somebody who's receiving some sort of subsidy because of people like him who have disenfranchised them, who have done things in a way so that they're unable to adequately take care of themselves because the corporation that they're supporting him, they have taken the jobs and shipped it offshore. They have done everything to keep people on a minimum wage job, but yet still you have managed to secure thousands of acres of land that you're living on, have all of your buddies out here to protect, to go and tell the government to give you back your cattle when they have a right to hold that cattle as collateral for what you have not paid in over 20 years, but yet still you're going to be telling people who it is that they need to pay their bill and they need to get up off their behind.
Well, he is, in effect, the prototypical, an archetypal type of American that just fully embodies this notion of natural rights. He's speaking from that perspective. He's speaking from the perspective of the person who is born to dominate and rule, and he knows nothing else. He knows no other way. And mm-hmm. everything around him, his society in which he grew up, the education that he allegedly received, the news media that he has available and informing his views, they all are confluent with that and consistent with that outlook that he is, in fact, entitled to certain rights and privileges as an American in the sense that he means it. So it's a really interesting thing. He really doesn't know that he doesn't understand the degree to which he is, so misinformed. But that's the society that produced that. Thanks so much, Sarah, for your call today.
You're welcome, Idris.
From New York, Ali, you're on the air.
Hello, Idris.
Hello, how are you?
How you doing, Idris? Okay.
Fine, thank you.
I wanted to make two comments, and one of the comments is going to be for Diaz, and I believe he's located in L.A. But my first comment is about that little segment that you ran with O'Reilly at John Calipari, and I mm-hmm. wanted to say something about that because these people, they always talk about that African-American, they also raped a grandparent or a single mom. And they never talk about themselves. But yeah, they have been raised probably by two parents, but they become bigots and they have no morals and no ethics. And the reason that I'm saying that, because John Calipari had two scandals, one in University of Massachusetts and one in Memphis, in University of Memphis. And that school, the last school, was sanctioned. And then when I heard him saying, my kids, I won't let my kids do that. I will have my kids being a guard by people.
Let's give a little context to this, Ali. This, you're referring to the conversation that I played between Bill O'Reilly and John Calipari, who is the basketball coach for Kentucky.
Yes, exactly. Right. And the reason that I have to make a comment about John Calipari is because, to me, he's suffering from ethical dementia. Yes. Because he does it. He was talking. Then they were never talking about the book. If you notice about that conversation, they were
absolutely right. Nobody got that. You just got that. Good for you.
They were never talking about the book. It was mm-hmm. everything O'Reilly also pushing just to talk about the kids' behavior mm-hmm. that they have been raised by grandparents or
by
a single mom.
Not even grandfathers, but by grandmothers.
Grandmothers, yes, correct. And then Calipari never mentioned that before Kentucky, he was in Memphis, and he was recruiting kids. And he knew that one of the kids, I believe, has stolen some property or something, and he still went and recruited. So he knew everything. And then he was talking about, in that interview, about my kids. How about the kids that he left in Kentucky, in the University of Memphis, that they were sanctioned for about 2 or 3 years, and they could not play in the NCAA?
All right.
Well, and then you. That's what I'm saying, that he suffered for ethical dementia. And he's a very sleazy basketball coach. But I just wanted to say also, a lot of these people that they said that they come from two family homes, a lot of, you know, this word dysfunctional family, mm-hmm. it usually apply to me, to people that they're being raised by two parents, and they're very dysfunctional. They never talk about that themselves. But this is what I wanted to say about, I think his name is Diaz from L.A. At one time, Diaz, I had responded to something that he had to say, and then he called you about 3 weeks ago, I would say, and then he mentioned my name three times.
Diaz.
And I believe he's from L.A. He said that I didn't understand about self-governor. Maybe he's right. Maybe I didn't understand it when he explained it. But then I do have to explain something to him. Because he was saying, and he know because on that day, I had mentioned it when I was explaining that. I had mentioned that I go to protest and I protest on this. Right now we're working on $15 an hour and things like that. And he said, like, protesting is like begging. So I just wanted to mention something to him. When Martin Luther King went to Memphis to help the sanitation people, and they used to use a sign said, "I am a man," it's because mm-hmm. back then they were talking about the two-thirds what the black men was considered, and they didn't get paid the same rate as the white men. So I guess back then Martin Luther King was begging. Yes. He probably was begging. And I just wanted to tell him that here in New York City, in Queens, I believe, 250 UPS workers got fired. And you know what they did? Yes, they were protesting. They were begging in front of City Hall with a Teamster to get their job back. Yes, it's begging. So if we go on through life and through the history, yes, people, they go out and protest. And yes, must be begging. But what else can we do? Because I can't sit home and have this peaceful revolution that he was talking about. That, I don't know, maybe I could just be a couch potato and just wait for that peaceful revolution, which will never happen. So there are things that we have to do that maybe they're not the right thing, but that is the only thing that we know just today that we could just push things a little bit further. Yes, it's begging, but if you said that to Martin Luther King, to John Lewis, all these people that they were able to get the civil rights and the voting act, yes, that's what they did. They begged for it, and we got it. And this, and even if people, they don't want to go out and vote, like myself, I still, some people wanted to have the right to do it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Ali, for your call today. New Jersey, Gary, you're on the air.
Yeah, Utrecht, it's nice to hear you back on the air.
Thank you.
And I'm a veteran for peace, and I'm appealing to, especially the caller previous, she mentioned protesting. There's a May Day protest. It was pretty successful 2 years ago. I didn't make last year's, but I'm appealing to your audience to come out and protest May 1st, New York City. I have about three different things. First of all, she previously mentioned dementia. I think the whole country has dementia, to be honest with you. But the country here, in the last 15 years or so, we've exported 50,000 good-paying jobs, and we import people, whether illegal or illegal or legal, whatever. And we can't sustain this type of existence. It just doesn't make any sense. The 1% wants us to buy their products with our pittance of income. And by the way, I was fired after 27 years with UPS, so I know UPS, and that was in the early 90s, for, you know, doing the right thing and getting caught up in management. But the second point I want to make is this is probably not going to sound very good to most people, but President Kennedy, who was my commander-in-chief back in the 60s, he was assassinated, and I believe, this is my own belief, that he proposed to eliminate the Federal Reserve and replace it with our own U.S. notes. I have one in my possession from 1963. 6 months later, he was assassinated. So I think our government, not only is it corrupt to the core, but I think it's so deviant, or I don't know what the word you want to use, but it colludes with big business to get its way. And I believe President Obama is in the same situation. I don't think, with all the good intent that he did when he was campaigning for my wife voted for him, I didn't, but I voted independent. I voted for Ralph Nader. But I believe he can't do anything. The back room told him that he has to abide by their decisions, and he will not be able to do anything that makes the 99% back in, you know, produced back into the middle class. I think he's really been threatened, and that's my own opinion, but you can throw it out there, and if it sticks, then, you
we'll
know,
see.
That, so be it.
We'll see. Well, did you cover your third point?
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed the third point. Oh.
Speaking of dementia, that's what you were talking about.
I'm 72, so I listen to Gary Noll previous to your show, so, I mean, I try to do as much as I can, but it seems to be, at times, the dementia does kick in. Have a nice day. Thanks.
Thank you, Gary, for your call. Brooklyn, Eric, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Trees. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I'm hearing you quite well.
Thank you. Yeah, I wanted to chime in real quick. It seemed like a few facts aren't truthful that have been mentioned by Sarah earlier. And it seems like she's getting her news from the hypnotic corporate media there on the big networks that are on TV or radio.
So what didn't she get right?
Well, first of all, the facts that I get, I usually get from people that are on the ground that actually go as independent reporters and are not bought and paid for by the corporate media, such as Infowars.com, which is Alex Jones, ThePowerHour.com, which is Joyce Riley. If those are the main, you know, independent, unsupported by the corporations media, there are other sources as well.
But what did she get wrong? What did she lack in terms of facts?
Well, the facts are is that Clive and Bundy has been used as an example because there are 50 families around him that have been run out of business. He's the only one left, and there are major, major contracts with huge corporations to build solar farms, hydrofracking, and he's the only one left in their way. And there are multi-million dollar contracts that have been signed by, and Harry Reid is involved in this huge scandal. And this is all kind of not obviously being talked about by the major, corporate news hypnotists. So,
these things that you're bringing to the light, notwithstanding, to what degree are these
point,
facts
his
that
point
you're presenting
of view is
related
that he's gonna
to
stand
the issue?
In front of the government and not let them run over him like they do everybody else. And thank God, thank goodness, there are people that have open minds and not hypnotized by the government that came to his support. Because otherwise, they had snipers. They had, you could call them attack dogs, hired assassins that went to confiscate his cattle, that went to put snipers around his ranch. He did not have any violent, or any of his supporters were not violent. They were peaceful people like you and me and everybody on, you know, who
yeah, they were peaceful with arms.
No. They weren't peaceful with arms. See, you don't have your facts straight either. You have
to read
the reports from people that were there reporting on the ground, not the corporate news media, okay? There were some people with arms,
okay,
but everybody was peaceful. Everybody, the government was on them before anyone even got there, you know, because the hoopla started after, thank goodness to Infowars.com, who actually sent reporters there and were reporting live and showing the truth, not the garbage lies that the hypnotic news media and corporations want people to believe.
But there are a couple of things here that we have to sort out. Number one, when you said that they were peaceful, of course they were peaceful, but they were armed, which means that they came with an attitude toward of peace, but they were prepared for war. So when people say, well, they were peaceful, but yes, if you're carrying a rifle...
Who came there first? Okay, do you know that the snipers were there attacking and intimidating... family and tasing his family before his supporters even got there? Do you know about that?
But here's the thing. It's not about who was there first. It is the people who were there first, let me argue within your parameters of discussion. If they came first, they were also representatives of the state. Security state. They were there to make sure, because of course they have a history that they needed to heed the lessons of, and that is called Waco and other situations where they had armed insurrections, and they were prepared. That's what that means. They came armed in the event that things actually would have deteriorated. On the other side, the citizens who came to Cliven's rescue or support also came armed. And they said, because I saw the interviews of several of them who said that, you know, their view was that the government was overreaching its authority.
Absolutely.
And they came to the support of Clyburn and said that, they walked with their guns. Well, now, what does that mean? Did they came prepared for a good game of Scrabble? No.
Hold on. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? Tell me.
But I'm not suggesting anything is wrong with it. I'm suggesting that we need
to read it for
what it
was. You're pointing it out. You're underlining it for a reason. What's the reason why you're underlining it?
You said that it was peaceful, and I'm saying yes. And the other side could also claim it was peaceful. The security of the law enforcement security people who were there would also make the same claim. We are very, very peaceful.
They were so peaceful that they tased people and they hit women when the cameras of the big media news weren't there, but the independent people were there. So, you know that we're living in a fascist military state. So you can't disagree with that. We all know that. What I'm underlining here is that you guys, before you speak your mind, mm-hmm. you have to get your facts not from the big news outlets. Okay, you get your facts from the independent sources that actually were there and show you the truth before you speak.
But a couple of things, Gary. You completely misinterpreted the entire discussion that we've had so far on the subject. And the discussion rested not on who came first or who was armed and who wasn't armed and any of that. The discussion that Sarah raised had to do with Bundy's racist views. That was the center of her discussion. And how it has now blown up in the face of people who came to his support, and now they have to find a way to back away from him. And I'm saying... the racist views are a symptom of a kind of world. These, we have people like this all over the United States whose information about others, I mean people other than themselves and the culture that they've known, their information about the other world is so poor, so bad, so miscast.
They're insulated. They live in the desert. Okay, they're insulated.
Yes,
they don't
get.
They're not connected to the big world that we are in. That's understandable. So
it is understandable, but at the same time, they also have a culture that informs their views, that reflects those views. So that was the discussion. The discussion had nothing to do with who was right and who was wrong. It's just
No. But see, she mentioned you. I don't know if you remember that she talked about that he is claiming or living on the land that is not his. And in Nevada, they have totally different laws for ranching. And if she would have got her facts from the independent reporters that actually went and reported on all that information, she would have understood that he did not claim that that land is his. It's public land and it's open for grazing rights.
That assertion was never made. It was never made that, you know, that he took land or whatever it is. And she said one of the issues there was that he hadn't paid his grazing rights.
He paid everything that. See that fact is, that's what I'm trying to underline here. That's the reason why I called. What she said and what you kind of agreed and went along with is not based on truth.
What is the truth? He paid his grazing fees?
He has paid everything that he needs to pay. He doesn't owe the government anything. What they're claiming is false.
Okay. Says who?
Says the independent reporters who went and researched this by law and Nevada state code and all the, you know, whatever the details are. And if you would have got the facts from a different source, you wouldn't have mentioned and stated that as fact, because it's not fact.
I did not state it as fact. I'm saying that this is what was presented to us, and it was, in fact...
Well, the government could present everything they want, and you know a lot of it is lies.
Let me ask you a question, Gary. Eric, did any of the independent media discuss his racism?
Yeah.
They did?
Absolutely.
Did they ask him directly, why are you so racist?
Yes, they did.
And the
racism you're bringing up is not the issue. That's just the latest development.
It is very much the issue.
Because like he's insulated.
But Eric, you can't have your cake and eat it too. Here's the thing.
The issue is that the government wants him off the land because they have contracts to build multi-million.
We can't talk over each other because we have people listening and they'd like to hear what each party has to say. So I will stop and you will continue now. You make your point. I will wait.
The issue is not the latest development distraction that the media has focused on to get people's attention off the truth. Why they want him off the land, why they came to attack him, why they claimed all the lies, it's all because of this turtle, blah, 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 and stuff like that. That's all garbage.
Well,
the racism is the latest development. You know, they focused on it just like the plane. You know, he's an insulated, you know, desert guy who's living in the 50s still in his mind. And he said something. And now they're focusing the magnifying glass on it, right? So that's a distraction.
I see it as a very important part of the story, although you said that that's not the story. In fact, there are many elements to the story. There isn't just one story. There are many facets to the story. One of the facets of the story is because I saw African-Americans with signs and whatnot there to support him. And one question might be, well, if you dislike people that much, I mean, if you have these racist views, maybe people ought to know so that they don't waste their time coming to your defense. Because there were quite a few African-Americans there with their signs supporting him. I saw that. Allow me to finish the discussion here. The second piece of it is, I get your point if you're saying that there were certain inaccuracies in the main media's accounts. I will look into that. If, in fact, that's true, we look into that. Number three is that the independent media themselves, I mean, they're very good. I've spent my entire life in non-mainstream media, so I have great respect for it. But I also know that very often they are also wrong, and very often they're also racist. I understand that too. So we cannot say in a blanket statement that because a media outfit presents itself as, quote, independent, that they're not inaccurate, or they're not racist, or they're not sexist, or they're not, you know, prejudiced in any other way, that they are to be exempt from doubt and questioning simply because they say, well, we are independent. But thanks so much for your call today. Very, very important. I will look into those issues, as you said, whether in fact these allegations are that he owes nothing, that in fact he had paid what he was supposed to pay. That's a blanket statement that suggests there were things that were at issue that have not fully been resolved. So we have to take a look at that as well. 888-874-4888. It is Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories, PRN.FM. A little bit of music and we come back to your calls right after that. And you're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're having our say today. That's your job. Your job is to offer up something for our consideration and debate, or to bring to our attention something that we haven't discussed before. 888-874-4888. You know, that was a very good call. The question about what you see as news and how different media take different approaches to it. These are very important things. There's no one way to tell a story. There are many aspects to a story. But if you're looking at the comprehensive way in which news is reported, then you have to also hold these news outlets to a particular standard. If they're telling you the story, if the story is that there were major inaccuracies in what was reported as Mr. Bundy's obligations that he had not fulfilled, then that becomes a story for fact checking, and it's something you have to do. I don't know whether he owed any taxes or whatever it is. I've been following the story much like everybody else. But I didn't see any stories or any other reports that there was some issue about what he had been owed. So it's something to look at. But I was more interested in the fact that in the very beginning, when the response from people who came to his support, the response was a definitive tone and a very, very important threshold that was crossed, informed by this Second Amendment, right, where people said they have the right to arm themselves and so forth. But he received a great deal of support on that basis, and it was a very interesting statement about the dissatisfaction of ordinary citizens with what they believe to be the burdensome presence and the overreaching and the abuse of power and authority by the state. That, to me, was the big question. Thanks a lot. L.A., DX, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrice. How are you?
Hello.
It's fine.
Fine, thank you. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. I wanted to call in and just put my two cents on this. Now, what I say, I intend no disrespect to Mr. Eric or to Sarah, but I think we've touched on a conundrum here, because first of all, nobody has a monopoly on the truth, as you know. I've listened to and looked at blogs, internet casts, all kinds of independent media, everything from all the way to the right, to the left, to from progressive to libertarian or right wing, and I also see some of this mainstream media, but everything I get is online. And as far as what Eric was saying, I've listened to Alex Jones, I've looked at his podcast and everything lots of times. Frankly, he can be a little, not just a little, a lot hyperbolic, and he can be, he can exaggerate things, he can take things too far, and we don't know how much truth we're getting there. Also, Eric is right, though, with the mainstream media, because oftentimes I've seen independent podcasts or whatever, and then I'll compare it to what CNN says or somebody like that, and it's totally different, or it's skewed in the way that the media and the government wants you to think about things. So they both happen to be right. It's hard discerning the facts here. Independent. See, we touched on this when we were talking a couple of months ago about Glenn Greenwald, Poitras et al., going over to this Omidyar, the billionaire from PayPal, and starting up this quote-unquote independent investigative, media organization over there.
The Intercept, yes.
Right. We have to really examine that word independent, and I think that's where Eric is just a little bit off track, because just because somebody is independent, as you indicated, doesn't mean that they're giving you the full truth without skewing and things like that. And that's what we want. We want the truth. So what I do, and I'm not suggesting anybody else do this, I'm just saying what I do is I take all of them into account. I watch a little bit of mainstream. I watch a little bit of, and I try to think what's more plausible to me. Because sometimes that's the only way you can really do it, especially when you do have a United States government that lies about, extraordinary amount of things, and you have a sort of right-wing populist situation here where you have these people who bring out their guns and say, oh, we're against the government, we're for this man being able to do what he wants on this land or whatever. Okay, so you have to kind of discern what sounds more plausible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Sarah's point was that this guy is a huge, huge racist, and he really is. I mean, and we have that on tape, okay? So that can't be denied, and Eric didn't try to deny it. I'm just saying, you know, he's a huge racist, so that has to be an issue here, but we have to keep from letting these little things. Now, this is where I do agree with Eric. Keep from letting these little issues get in the way of getting at the real facts of what's going on here. And I have no doubt that some of this on the government's part is that they do want to get these corporations in there. They do want to force this man off of this land, which he just uses it to graze, I guess, his animals. He's not claiming it's his. But, you know, we have to kind of, like, not let these little issues that they throw in there to distract us get us preoccupied with that. And so I think for a future show, we might want to delve more into the quote-unquote independent media. You know what I mean?
Okay. That's a good suggestion. I take it. Thank you, sir, for making it. Thank you.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Today. From Chicago, Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you doing, your treat?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
All right. Rahm Emanuel here in Chicago is continuing his war against education. Just this week, he announced that CPS must have AC units in every school in 5 years.
CPS is the Chicago Public Schools.
Chicago Public Schools. And the thing was that it really, they estimated the cost between $100 million to $1.36 billion for that particular project. Just the other day, he announced the opening of the Obama School, which is going to cost about, I think they said about $70 million to open up in 2017. He also, CPS also turned around two schools over on the south side. So we're watching this decimation of public schooling here in Chicago, and I'm just wondering, what are the black voters thinking in this next election? Because if this guy gets elected the next time around, the black population in Chicago will go down significantly. I'm just afraid that we're not politically literate here to know that this guy, when he first came in, and I was telling people 4 years ago, I'm like, if you let this guy in Chicago, you guys are going to be sorry. But I still hear enough of black leaders here, you know, still supporting this guy, and particularly people in the black church, which, you know, worries me a lot. Because, like I said, if he gets another term here in Chicago, I'm willing to bet you in the next 10 years, there's going to be the black population in Chicago is going to be less than 30%. I mean, you're seeing what he's doing in the schools. He's ruining the schools. I mean, he's closed 50 schools, and I mean, we're gonna really, really take the brunt on this. So, I'm just hoping people look at this guy and just basically, please, if you guys want to stay in the city and have an affordable life, you do not want this guy back as your mayor again. So that's all I want to say as the unofficial reporter
correspondent
here in
from Chicago.
Yes.
You know, we recently talked with Karen Lewis, who heads the Chicago Teachers Union. And I know that since our discussion with her, she has come under a virulent attack because she is now attacking the federal standards of the core curriculums that President Obama and his so-called education secretary are pushing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're right. Rahm Emanuel has closed 50 schools. There are more to come. And it is part of the national program to shut down at least 5,000 schools, almost all of them in black and Latino communities nationwide. And this would, of course, encourage a shift, which is the intention, to encourage a shift to the charter school system, which has not been proven to be of greater benefit than your regular public schools.
Oh,
in Chicago,
yeah.
Though, I got to ask you, Henry, I mean, the issue is really about the degree to which folks in Chicago, and they have more standing than anybody else because the president, this is his backyard. And they should hold him accountable for the fact that you have a Rahm Emanuel. I mean, the fact that Rahm Emanuel is mayor of the city of Chicago is directly related to the fact that Barack Obama came from Chicago. The Democratic Party got its unprecedented support in Chicago, and the people are voting Democrat because, I mean, irrespective of what the party is doing to them. So I have to ask you, what kind of education is going on where people are being asked to reevaluate this party and its performance?
Well, see, that's the problem. We're not being educated politically, as black people here in Chicago. You know, most people forgot that when Rahm was a state representative here, he was on the housing board for Chicago Housing Authority, which tore down a lot of those projects here and moved and shipped a lot of black people to basically the suburbs. Now, a lot of those places where the projects used to be at, they're basically gentrified areas now where you can't afford to work there. I mean, you can't afford to live there. So, you know, the thing is that we just have to understand what is going on in front of our face instead of looking at, you know, attaching a name to, you know, a particular candidate. Because, you know, as much as I tried to tell people about Rahm Emanuel 4 years ago, you know, I guess everybody was so glad to get, you know, Mayor Daley out of here. It's like, you're getting a guy worse than Mayor Daley. I mean, this guy is worse than Mayor Daley. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't mind having Mayor Daley back in Chicago right now.
Oh,
I know that
wow.
sounds like a bad thing, but I'm telling you, he is worse than Mayor Daley.
So again, is there any sign at all that people are beginning to say, you know what, we have to rethink this affinity that we have to the Democratic Party, where we keep giving it license and authority to really kick us in the butt? And that's what the Democratic Party has been doing.
And you know what, Utrecht, I'm sorry. Here in Chicago, it's not even just the Democratic Party. It's this guy. I don't know what the black church has with this guy, because they are on his side, and it worries me that this guy is going to win the next election in the next 2 years.
Well, we see. He certainly is extremely ambitious, and he does have his eye on the White House eventually. That's his plan. Thank you, Henry, our correspondent from Chicago. Thanks so much for calling in today. We have Eric with a K from Brooklyn.
Hey, Trees.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
This is a wonderful program. I want to make a comment about the same subject, and I think it's from a slightly different perspective. I haven't heard it yet, but I usually talk about the idea that this government is engaged in making people lose, forcing people to lose everything, right? The American people are no longer worth it to their government, and this finally includes white people, you know, on a major scale. So, you know, I'm looking at what happened in that perspective and seeing that, you know, the reason the government didn't go any further is because there's a certain status that white people have been allowed to adopt. There's a certain attitude, which is that, you know, I mean, basically they're the cream of the crop. You know, they're the ones that are allowed to do whatever they want. They're the ones that have no limits, you know. So here's a government that's not turning on them after having allowed them to do whatever they want. You know, they wanted for so long. It's finally turning on them. And because it's turning on them, you know, they can't, I mean, it's so much harder for them to accept it or for them to deal with it, you know. And this government knows that if they would have gone further, this could have been, you know, this little spark that put them over the edge. You know, because they can see the writing, the writing on the wall, just like everybody else. You know, you're no longer worth it. Just like, you know, you look at all of these other countries that have lost at the hands of this government, then you know how far they're willing to go. They're willing to destroy you, you know. So these people with their arms, you know, face the government, and the government, you know, fell back. You know, especially with a black man at the head, the government had to fall back because, you know, this is why they want the guns off the street. This is why they want to confiscate guns. because they're going to force you to lose. You look at how many people are losing water, how many people are losing land, how many people are losing food, losing their genes, you know? So all of this loss is resulting in people waking up a little bit, and these kind of situations are what the government wants to hush up because they don't want you to see how far they will go. With everybody else, you know, they could go that far, and we deserve it. You know, they could drop bombs or, you know, in Oklahoma, or they can bomb you in Philadelphia or, you know, firebomb you. And that's acceptable because, you know, those are people that really don't have standing, you know. But here's a man that's supposed to have standing in this country, and you go against him, and you reveal that nobody's safe, and those people are going to react. And I think that's a part of it that people need to think about.
Well, thank you, sir. And you have had the last word today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Eric, for calling and for offering your thoughts. And thank you all, Gary and Harvey and Sarah and Ali and the two Erics and DX from L.A. and Henry from Chicago. Thank you all for your extraordinary input. It is indeed a pleasure and a privilege, I mean that sincerely, to be in your company. Stay tuned. Keep it right here. Coming up next is Richard Martin with Wake Up Call. Write me a note. Let me know what you're thinking at leadstories@gmail.com or on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. Great programming coming up next week. I hope you stay with me. Thanks so much.